Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we're going to be talking about a proposed change to the electric vehicle tax credit in the United States under a bill called the Clean Energy for America Act that has passed in a Senate committee. So still a long way to go, but this gives us our best insight so far into how a possible structure might look, and there are some big changes. And after spending kind of all day digging through this, there are a couple of items that have not been well reported on yet. So we'll look at the details there. Then we also have numbers out of China for April, production numbers this time, news on Tesla's safety ratings in lieu of the Tesla Vision change, news on semiconductors, and an update on the refresh Model S. Interesting day for Tesla stock, mostly because of the close. Tesla had been trading up about 0.5%, and then in the final 10 minutes of the day, shot up by almost $10 to close up 1.9% at $630.85. My guess here, I don't know, I'm recording right as closing is happening, but my guess here is it's probably part of a closing cross trade when someone just placed a pretty big order and created a lot of demand on that trade. If you're not sure exactly what I'm talking about, we talked a lot about that trade going back to the S&P 500 inclusion. So if you want to go back and learn more about that, you can check that episode out. Or maybe we'll see a more direct reason come out as we're recording. We'll just have to wait and see. All right, so let's get into the proposed bill here involving the EV tax credit changes. This is notable because it has passed in a Senate committee, so it is going to move on to the next step. So there certainly could still be changes. It could still not pass at all, but it is worth looking at where things stand with this proposal. So first off, if you've been following this over the last day or two on Twitter or on Reddit or whatever, it's been confusing. There have been documents that have been published and news reports that have been put out that haven't necessarily matched each other. So the reason this has been confusing on top of the normal legalese is because there have been two documents, one the original proposal and then two the modifications to the original proposal. So the first was on May 24th, second on May 26th. The modifications document builds off that original proposal, so there are important elements of both that we can take away. If you do want to poke through all the specifics, I'll put a link to all the master documents. There's actually more than two, but I'll put a link to those in the show notes. So first up, let's take a look at the original proposal and the elements that that contains. So step one, the critical basis here, this extends and modifies Section 30D of the IRS code, which is the part of the code that houses the EV tax credit, with of course the $200,000 per manufacturer vehicle cap. So they're not writing a whole new thing here, they're extending it and modifying it. One of those important modifications is the removal of that cap. Per this original proposal, they said that the elimination of the per manufacturer cap is effective for vehicles sold after May 24th, 2021. And again, that was the date of this proposal. My hunch would be that that date continues to be updated as this works through the process, which, if that guess is correct, means it would not be retroactive. If that May 24th date stays, and this passes in, let's say, August or something, then potentially there could be a period of time there that's retroactive for, but not before May 24th. So we've got a good start here for Tesla. Obviously, that per manufacturer cap right now is a disadvantage towards Tesla since they've hit that. Continuing with the modifications, let's move into how this new credit might phase out. This piece is significant, but is also one of the areas that I think is causing some confusion. So the proposal here is to keep the credit in its entirety with no manufacturer stipulations up until, quote, the total annual sales of new qualified fuel cell motor vehicles and new qualified plug-in electric drive motor vehicles in the United States exceed 50% of the total annual sales of new passenger vehicles in the United States, end quote. So when that 50% threshold is met as determined by the US government, that starts the calendar for the phase-out period. How they describe that in the description of the bill is a little bit confusing, but the actual bill is clearer. So in the calendar year that the threshold is met, the full credit remains through the end of that year. Then the following year, the full credit remains the entirety of that year. The following year, it steps down to 75%. The year after that, down to 50%. Then the following year, down to 0%. So to make that clear, let's say the threshold is met in the middle of some year. The next year and a half would get the full credit, then 75% in the following year, 50% in the following year, then it's gone. So some reports have been confused on that. The other detail that I think people are missing here, and I'm not 100% confident on this, but because it does say 50% need to be qualified plug-in electric vehicles, my current understanding is that would include plug-in hybrids. My reason for thinking that is if we again go back to what this is being established on, the basis that this is being built on, that is the old credit, and that does include plug-in hybrids as qualified electric vehicles for credits. The way the old credit is structured is you need to have at least a 5 kilowatt hour battery. That gives you a $2,500 credit, and then each additional kilowatt hour adds $417 of credit. So once you get up to 17 kilowatt hours or more, you're maxing out at the full $7,500 credit. Regardless though, anything with a 5 kilowatt hour or more battery would count as part of that 50% threshold. So at first, that does look like a really high bar that's going to last for a long time, but not quite as long if it does indeed include those plug-in hybrids. Anyway, on to the next element here, they do propose to change how the EV credit is received, proposing that after January 1st, 2022, the EV credit would become a, quote, refundable personal income tax credit, end quote. That's a big change because that means your tax liability doesn't matter. So you'd still get the credit during tax time. But if you don't have, let's say, $7,500 of tax liability, which many people may not, under the current structure, you couldn't get the full tax credit. If it changes to being a refundable tax credit, that would mean that you'd get the full credit regardless of tax liability. So definitely an important change there, and note that the January 1st, 2022 date on that only has to do with how that credit is structured. Remember, we still had that May 24th date to extend the baseline to get that credit, but again, that May 24th date could certainly change. All right, the last big piece of this original proposal is an introduction of a commercial EV credit. This is something I didn't really see reported on, but this basically proposes a commercial electric vehicle credit that would cover 30% of the cost difference between an electric vehicle and a comparable internal combustion engine vehicle. So my read on this, just for a rough example, let's say they determine something comparable to the Tesla Semi costs $50,000 less, then the credit the Tesla Semi would be eligible for would be $15,000. So that could potentially be pretty impactful, definitely something to keep an eye on as this works through Congress. All right, so those are the key details that I saw in the original proposal, just to summarize those, and then we'll go through the modifications. So far, we've got the removal of the manufacturer cap. That's obviously a critical piece for Tesla. We've got the new phase-out, once 50% of new car sales are electrified. Then we've got the change to the tax credit, now being refundable. And lastly, we've got the new commercial electric vehicle credit. So those things all stay, and then the modifications layer on top of that. There's been a lot of reporting about this today. The first modification is to provide an additional $2,500 credit for new qualified plug-in electric drive motor vehicles for which final assembly is at a facility in the United States. So, hey, that's great for Tesla. That would bump the credit from $7,500 all the way up to $10,000. Then the next modification is another $2,500 for vehicles in which the final assembly is done at a facility whose production workers are members of or are represented by a labor organization, also known as a union. So if it's union made in the US, that would bump the credit up by $2,500 and then $2,500 again, $5,000 total, to $12,500. And of course, Tesla, as it stands now, would not be eligible for that additional $2,500 from union made. So everyone's going to have their thoughts on that. As I've said in the past, I'm not a fan of that stipulation, but that's where the proposal is at right now. Things could definitely still change. The next modification is a price limit. So the proposal here is to eliminate the credit for any vehicle with an MSRP, manufacturer suggested retail price, of more than $80,000. So it does not say base price, so I think that would be inclusive of options. Right now, of course, the Model S starts just under that price threshold, but as this proposal is structured, then adding any options to that would eliminate the tax credit. So I don't mind the threshold, even a lower one I think would be fine, but I do wish there wasn't like a hard line there and it was more of a phase out. I think those hard lines tend to encourage some kind of weird choices from both automakers and consumers. Even at $80,000 though, obviously still a ton of opportunity for Tesla under that range. So those were the big three things reported on from the modifications. One other thing that I did notice that I didn't see reported on here, and I don't know if I'm interpreting this fully correctly, but about the US vehicle portion of this, they say for vehicles sold after December 31st, 2025, the base amount of credit for new qualified plug-in electric drive motor vehicles is increased from $2,500 to $5,000, and final assembly of a new qualified plug-in electric drive motor vehicle must occur in the United States. So I had to read this like five times to understand what they're saying here, but I believe when they say the base amount of the credit, that goes all the way back to how things are structured today, Section 30D of the IRS code, where that base credit is $2,500 for vehicles with 5 kilowatt hours or more, and then it scales up to $7,500 from there. So I believe what this is saying is that after December 31st, 2025, to get any of the credit, any of that $7,500 base credit, you would need to manufacture in the US. So basically, it would give a little bit of time for foreign automakers to get that set up, but if they're not doing that by 2026, they'd get no EV credit, while US manufacturers could be getting up to $12,500 per car. That's my read on it, and again, a pretty important detail that I haven't really seen reported on. All right, last little detail is an amendment that was unanimously approved, again, just by this committee as it was going through the voting process. And that amendment excludes Chinese-produced electric vehicles from any EV credit. So that can throw up some red flags in terms of some potential retaliation in China's electric vehicle market. But remember, this is just Chinese-produced. It doesn't say a Chinese company can't come here and produce them in the US, which would be analogous to what Tesla is doing in China. So worth considering, again, that piece was unanimously approved, so in a final version, I'm sure that would make it as well, but hopefully no cause of blowback there for Tesla. Okay, so just to sum everything up that we just talked through, from the original and with the modifications, this proposal would remove the manufacturer cap for the $7,500 credit, It would add a potential $2,500 credit for U.S. made, a potential $2,500 credit for union made, and it would institute an $80,000 MSRP price limit. There would be a new phase out, which would start once 50% of new passenger vehicles sold in the United States are fuel cell vehicles or qualified plug-in electric drive motor vehicles, my understanding of which would include plug-in hybrids. Then we've got the tax credit switching over to be a refundable tax credit, so your tax liability wouldn't matter. Then we've got a new commercial EV credit, 30% of the difference between an electric and an ICE vehicle. And then lastly, this would exclude Chinese-produced vehicles, and after 2025, it would seem to exclude all foreign-manufactured vehicles from the EV credit. All right, so what's the status on all this? As I said, this has passed the Senate Finance Committee. The vote was a tie, but the chairman has notified the committee that they're going to introduce the bill as modified and amended onto the Senate calendar. As for the likelihood of passage or the timeline, that's outside my wheelhouse. I just thought it was important to cover this in as much detail because it's really the first building blocks that we have seen for what a new EV credit might look like. So I know that was a really detailed recap. People don't always appreciate that, but hey, it's only 10 minutes, hopefully worthwhile. Let's pretend for a second that this passes as is, no other changes, probably not likely, but if it did happen, I do think this would likely be a net benefit to Tesla. I think what most people want is just a level playing field. This doesn't fully accomplish that because of that union-made stuff. In many cases right now, though, Tesla's at a $7,500 disadvantage versus some other EVs. This would cut that to $2,500. That's not an excuse, but Tesla should be able to perform really well in that type of an environment. Overall, this would be a win for electric vehicles versus internal combustion engine vehicles. It should give automakers confidence to invest even more heavily in that space and divest more quickly from internal combustion engine vehicles. From a competitive place, you could argue that's not actually great for Tesla, but I think we're all okay with that if it accelerates the transition to EVs. And if the phase-out does end up being structured like this, that's actually a pretty big win for Tesla because it incentivizes fast action and high production rates so that customers buying your vehicles can capture a bigger chunk of that available credit before it starts getting phased out once the threshold of 50% is crossed. Further on down the road, if this does get closer to passing, we can definitely spend some time breaking down how that might look between Tesla and others. As for other impacts, timing-wise, if this does happen later this year, it's hard to imagine really any better timing for Tesla for that to occur, maybe a little bit later. But as Giga Berlin comes online, Giga Berlin can be solely dedicated on supplying Europe, Giga Shanghai on Asia Pacific, and then Giga Texas and Fremont, all that production capacity can just be absorbed in the United States. So yes, Tesla is production constrained, but they're not so production constrained that they're just sending everything from Fremont into, you know, California, for example. They're shipping that stuff internationally. A tax credit could boost demand in the United States enough to just completely absorb all of Fremont and then all of Texas, meaning all of a sudden you're kind of tripling deliveries in the United States. That's a whole other level of demand. I think Tesla planning on accomplishing that with a series of lower prices and better value proposition from everything they talked about at Battery Day, and then of course tailwinds from more autonomy features. But if this happens, you can then layer in tax credit right alongside those or substitute that for lower prices, and Tesla should be in a really, really great spot. So I don't think it's a perfect structure, but I think there are structures that could be far worse for Tesla. And I think, again, this is probably a net positive. And of course, we'll continue to follow any developments on this. Probably one other thing worth noting is that this proposal is not just about EV tax credits. This is like a 150, 170 page bill. It's called the Clean Energy for America Act. So there's a lot of other elements to this besides just the EV tax credit. And obviously those can have implications as well. One thing here, if we look at the revenue impact that they're forecasting from this bill, they do note that from 2022 to 2031, this would terminate about $24.5 billion of fossil fuel credits. Weirdly enough here, they also, for some reason, seem to estimate the total cost of the EV credits to only be $31.5 billion from 2022 to 2031. If we assume $10,000 a vehicle, that's only 3.1 million vehicles getting the credit. But the US auto market is about 17 million vehicles per year, so I don't really know how that computes with a 50% threshold. I guess maybe they expect that to take way, way longer or to include a ton of foreign EVs that aren't getting the credit. But I don't know, that seems way too low to me. They might want to take a second look at that forecast unless I'm just completely missing something here. Those revenue forecasts will also be in the master document link that I mentioned before in the show notes. And yeah, let me know if I'm missing something. All right, let's finally move on here. Still a couple more topics. First up here, we have quite a bit of reporting over the last couple of days about a change in NHTSA's safety ratings for Tesla as a result of the move to Tesla Vision that we talked about yesterday. So some of the reporting on this has been a little bit misleading. Tesla's safety ratings themselves did not actually change at all. They still have a 5-star safety rating from NHTSA, but NHTSA does categorize what they call recommended safety technology for which they specify four elements: forward collision warning, lane departure warning, crash imminent braking, and dynamic brake support. So for the vehicles that Tesla is shipping without radar, they don't have the check for those safety features from NHTSA. In the announcement that we discussed yesterday about Tesla Vision, Tesla did say that emergency lane departure avoidance may be disabled at delivery. They didn't specifically mention the other features here, even though those have no check from NHTSA as well. But Tesla's wording here is that some of the features may be temporarily limited or inactive, including these features, so it wasn't necessarily exhaustive. So automatic emergency braking might also not work right now under Tesla Vision with no radar. Now, maybe Tesla didn't include that in the post because they didn't want people to overreact to it because they view this as a temporary thing, or maybe they just expect that to be ready to go by the time they actually start delivering these to customers. NHTSA is not going to give a check mark based on an expectation, so they're going to have to wait to see that in action. But again, hopefully all these things are temporary. That's what Tesla has said. So once they can demonstrate that, presumably they'll get that check mark back from NHTSA. All right, next up here, we've got an interesting report from the Financial Times. They are reporting that, quote, Tesla is set to take the unusual step of paying in advance for chips to secure its supply of the crucial materials and is also exploring buying a plant as part of efforts to overcome the global shortage, according to people familiar with the matter, end quote. So the first part of that, I think no one would find that too surprising. The second part is very interesting. We were just talking about semiconductor fabrication with Pierre on Tuesday, and that's kind of its own whole crazy business. The Financial Times here says, quote, a cutting-edge fab requires investment of up to $20 billion, and the intricacies of operating such plants are notoriously hard to master, end quote. So this may be a little bit of a bridge too far in terms of vertical integration for Tesla, but hey, as soon as you say that, then Tesla goes out and does it. Financial Times does say that Tesla's interest in an outright purchase of a plant was at a much more preliminary stage, according to these sources, which, by the way, are from the semiconductor industry. So it's definitely an interesting report, and Tesla does have the capability of doing something like that with the market cap that they've got. They don't have the cash on hand to invest $20 billion like that, but they could definitely raise it. That would be about 3.3% dilution, or they could have stock as part of the deal. I think Tesla's likely just exploring this as an option if things were to get much, much worse than they are today. I think if things stay as they are right now, Tesla's probably content to continue to purchase. They could also just be floating this idea to put a little bit of pressure on, because presumably semiconductor manufacturers probably don't want to compete with Tesla in that space. So rumors like this could be helpful for Tesla to be able to secure their supply a little bit more easily. Definitely would be interesting though if Tesla did end up going down that path. Next here, we've got an interesting development surfacing as a result of an owner taking delivery of a new Model Y. This has got software version 2021.4.15.11 installed on it, and in the release notes, per a photo shared out on Twitter by new owner Kevin Smith, this firmware is now activating the interior camera for driver monitoring purposes. So I know people have a lot of strong feelings on this issue one way or another, but the update here says, quote, the cabin camera above your rearview mirror can now detect and alert driver inattentiveness while autopilot is engaged. Camera data does not leave the car itself, which means the system cannot save or transmit information unless data sharing is enabled. To change your data settings, tap Controls, Safety and Security, Data Sharing on your car's touchscreen, end quote. So a lot of people, seemingly not so much Tesla customers, have pushed for Tesla to try to get something like this added. Elon Musk has pretty much held the stance for a while that it doesn't really matter because autonomy will be here soon enough. But from some recent tweets from Green the Only, you could see that behind the scenes, or under the covers rather, Tesla had been working on this feature recently. Despite the firmware having this, Kevin Smith has said that the neg still does happen. It seems like it's happening on par with his old Model 3. But hopefully once they fully validate this, if the monitoring is required, which it seems like it is, hopefully that would eliminate the need for the neg. Again, right now that is just on the new vehicle's firmware, but that will probably expand pretty quickly. All right, last couple of items here. I know we're getting up there in time now. First, some news on the Plaid and Plaid Plus Model S. A lot of Plaid Plus order holders are reporting that they have received calls from Tesla over the last couple of days, telling them that the Plaid Plus has been delayed to mid-2022. We had seen that design studio update quite a while back, but it wasn't clear if that affected just new orders or all orders. My guess at the time was all. That does appear to be the case now with these calls. And yes, I know some of the international design studios were later to update on that, but I think that's just something Tesla needed to get around to. But anyway, Tesla calling these Plaid Plus order holders, telling them that the Plaid would be available in June for them if they did want to change their orders. So we had previously highlighted this on the design studio that it was still showing June, which could mean really good news for Plaid production or not so great news for Plaid demand, as Plaid kind of sits in that weird territory right now, where if you're going to spend $120,000 on a car, Do you just want to wait and spend $150,000 on the Plaid Plus? Tesla with these calls trying to get people to say, eh, maybe I don't want to wait another year. All right, finally, lastly for today, Dekirk on Twitter has shared the Made in China April production numbers for Giga Shanghai. I think we'll spend a little bit more time analyzing the implications of these numbers tomorrow, but they are strong. So April production was at 30,500 vehicles, almost equivalent to March, even though we did have some temporary shutdown of the Model Y production lines. So I don't want to spoil too much of the discussion on that for tomorrow, but yes, I am very happy with those numbers, and I think they mean really good things for the rest of the quarter. So that is where we will finally wrap it up for today. As always, thank you for listening. If you made it this far, I appreciate it. Don't forget to hit the like button on your way over to something else. Also, make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. And you can find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And I'll see you tomorrow for the Friday, May 28th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.